Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 10, text 21. Adityanam Maham Vishnur. Jyotishang Ravirang Shuman. Marichir Marutamasmi. Nakshatranam Aham Shashi. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of lights, I am the radiant sun. Of the Maruts, I am Marichi. And among the stars, I am the moon. Krishna speaking. Purport. There are 12 Adityas, of which Krishna is the principal. Among all the luminaries shining in the sky, the sun is the chief, and in the Brahma Sanghita, the sun is accepted as the glowing eye of the Supreme Lord. There are 50 varieties of wind blowing in space, and of these winds, the controlling deity Marichi represents Krishna. Among the stars, the moon is the most prominent at night, and thus the moon represents Krishna. It appears from this verse that the moon is one of the stars. Therefore, the stars that twinkle in the sky also reflect the light of the sun. The theory that there are many suns within the universe is not accepted by Vedic literature. The sun is one, and as by the reflection of the sun the moon illuminates, so also do the stars. Since Bhagavad Gita indicates herein that the moon is one of the stars, the twinkling stars are not suns, but are similar to the moon. Adityanam Aham Vishnur Jyotisham Ravirang Shuman Marichi Marutam Asmi Nakshatranam Aham Shashi. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of lights, I am the radiant sun. Of the Maruts, I am Marichi. And among the stars, I am the moon. Well, I didn't choose to speak on this because it's the New Year! Happy New Year! As we heard a gang of drunken young men yelling out last night. Did you hear them? No, I heard them. Presume they were drunken. They sounded like they were drunken. A year is required in the measurement of time. A year, what is called a solar year, measured according to the sun, is according to the movement of the earth around the sun, or the sun around the earth, whichever way you want to take it. And it's supposed to be 365 days, although it's actually 365 and a quarter or so. Even the one leap year every 4 years, that also will get out in course of time. And we'll have to adjust that, because it's not exactly 365 and a quarter. So, talking about astronomical issues here. Literally astronomical issues. The word astronomical is also used to, metaphorically, to mean something of great import or size. This Bhagavad Gita as it is among the many millions of books of Srila Prabhupada distributed all over the world, the most distributed. In here we have statements such as, the moon is one of the stars. The twinkling stars are not suns, as is a fact, because you're taught it at school, right? It must be a fact. It must be correct. Otherwise, why would they teach it in the schools? all the big scientists, they look in their telescopes and they inform us that each star is a sun with various planets going around it. But Srila Prabhupada says that they are not suns, but they're similar to the moon. There are other statements here in this Bhagavad Gita as it is, such as in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada writes that women are like children, not very intelligent, never to be given independence. So, anyone who reads this, coming from a background of normal modern education, we'll understand that the author of this book doesn't give a damn for modern education and or modern ways of thinking, and makes statements which are completely opposed to what is accepted as knowledge in modern society. There are many points. Here, the point of astronomy, and elsewhere, the point of women's intelligence. And here in Bhagavad Gita, also, Srila Prabhupada, following what Krishna states, speaks briefly, as Krishna also speaks briefly, about what is nowadays conceived of as the caste system, which is considered to be something very bad. So in almost always, in almost all ways, what Srila Prabhupada is presenting here is quite opposite and opposed to the world view of the world today. That should be clear from studying this Bhagavad Gita as it is. The prosecutors in Omsk in Siberia, in Russia, they wanted to ban the distribution of Bhagavad Gita as it is. This was about 2 years ago. And it became a major issue which came to the Indian Parliament, and on both sides of the great divide between the UPA, what's the other side called? NDA, the United Progressive Alliance, and the National Democratic, no? Is it? National Democratic Alliance. On both sides, members of parliament stood up and said, "It's not Bhagavad Gita." I doubt if hardly any of them had any idea what's in Bhagavad Gita. But they were outraged that the Russian courts should seek to ban it. Actually, there may be some of them who do know. Some of them may know something. This L.K. Advani, he reads a lot, it seems. But the prosecutors, they said, "We're not against Bhagavad Gita, we're against this edition, because it has so many statements which are sexist, racist, elitist." But their pleas were drowned in the political waves coming from Moscow saying, "Hey, it's not worth pursuing this. We're getting a lot of heat from Delhi, and it's not worth making such a big issue out of this. We presume that this happened." And therefore they dropped the case. But actually I was hoping that the case would go through. What demon am I? I was hoping that the case would go through, because then in the court the devotees would be faced with the fact that Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, according to the contemporary worldview of this demoniac world, is sexist, racist, elitist, anti-science, and so on. So it would have been great. Then our devotees would have been forced either to declare their faith in what Srila Prabhupada teaches and justify it, or they would have had to follow the natural course of their present compromise and made some, try to cover it up or something like this. In America, in the 1970s, there was, maybe it was 80s, early 1980s, there was some severe case. There were many serious cases against our movement for kidnapping and brainwashing people. And I heard it said that one of our big leaders, when it was brought up in the court, picture of Nrisimhadev ripping Hiranyakashipu, in the court they were making the case that, well, you see, this movement turns children against their parents. And there's a picture of Prahlad standing by, watching while Hiranyakashipu, his father, is getting ripped to pieces by Nrisimha. They say this is God. And apparently one of our leaders said, well, no, it's just, it's symbolic of the forces of good and evil. And so it would have been a great test for our devotees. Are they really willing to stand by and what Srila Prabhupada says and justify it in the face of everything that the world has to say? And it's actually amazing, even in the 1970s, when Srila Prabhupada was present with us, he said, I'm surprised they don't arrest me for what I am saying. the book distribution is going on, and there are millions of copies all over the world. And actually, according to law, these books could be impounded and banned, because they are. The anti-science thing, well, in most countries, the idea of freedom of speech would allow this, but this so-called sexist statements and elitist statements, this just like Mein Kampf, this book of Hitler, which means my struggle. So that's banned in most countries because it's rabidly anti-Jewish. But Hitler, he got his ideas from, well, he built his ideas around the idea of Germans being the Aryan race. or the an-Aryan race. So, on that basis also, actually, according to modern Indian law, not only is sati, the right of a widow entering her husband's funeral pyre, not only is that forbidden, but even to speak in approval of it is illegal. So that would mean a lot of the Shastra would have to be banned, and definitely in Srila Prabhupada's books also. It is approved, but he says it's not suitable for the modern age, where previously a woman would feel the flames to be not painful, the flame of separation from her husband would be more painful, and therefore she would enter the fire. And there are many descriptions of women who, the European travelers and merchants in India, they saw the women would sit and they would be completely expressionless. And as the fire is burning them, And even in Europe, there are many cases of people who chose to be burned to death for the crime of being either a Catholic or a Protestant, depending on which, under which regime they're in. Who they could have saved themselves from that, but they preferred to be burned to death for the sake of what they believed in. And there was one Protestant whose name I don't remember, because the Protestants don't promote their martyrs in the same way that the Catholics do. There was one Protestant in England, he was being burned to death during a period. It was mostly the Protestants. Once this Protestant-Catholic thing came out, it was mostly the Protestants were in charge, but for a short time the Catholics got charged. And one Protestant who was getting burned, he was tied up in the fire, and he put his hand out and said, "Let this be burned first," because he had he'd used his hand for some time to support the opinion which he'd later revoked and got burned for. Anyway, Nakshatrana Maham Shashi, the moon, among the stars, I am the moon, Krishna says. And it's a long list in this chapter of the Vibhuti Yoga, the opulences of the amazing things of these worlds, of this world, which can be understood to represent Krishna. So the list is there, and among it, Krishna says, among the stars, I am the moon. That's a relatively minor statement compared to the statements in the Puranas, which give much more what was considered to be information about the universe, and which is nowadays by most readers of that considered to be ancient mythology and folklore. In the Puranas and in other Shastras, there are descriptions of what even the first Europeans who heard of this, they thought it was completely absurd, this, some of the descriptions. For instance, in the Puranas, including the Bhagavad Purana, it's described that not only is there an ocean of salt water, but there's also an ocean of clear water, an ocean of sugarcane water, an ocean of ghee, an ocean of yogurt, an ocean of milk, and an ocean of liquor. I thought, this is bizarre. It's just an ocean of milk. There must be preservative in it. How's it? Milk ocean. Well, Vishnu, the preserver, he lies on the milk ocean, so I guess he's the transcendental preservative. Kshiradakshay Vishnu. Kshiradakshay means lying on the milk. At the same time, the Europeans were impressed at how the astrologers were so accurate in their prediction. They could predict eclipses. They thought that was pretty smart for them to be able to do that, which means they didn't have their astronomy all wrong. They had that's considered quite sophisticated. But in general, when we see these descriptions, the descriptions of the universe, and there's a fellow with four heads sitting up there somewhere. Not somewhere, his position is given. And all the different planets, life on different planets. And according to modern science, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. A completely different outlook. But the modern science is based on careful observation, which has been not done just by one person, but by many persons over many years. And they've come to their conclusions by consensus, and one scientist, if he makes a theory, other scientists have to test it, and they come to different conclusions. But Krishna says, Nakshatranam Aham Shashi. Among the stars, I am the moon. Now, some of our devotees, they have wondered about this. Well, what is this? You know, in science, we know that the sun, it's not that there's only one sun, all the stars are a sun, and all these descriptions, Mount Meru, we don't see any Mount Meru. Yeah, well, there's a reason for that. This description of Meru, and all kinds of strange things. We have in the Ramayana, we have talking monkeys, and well, I guess most devotees accept that, the talking monkeys, but it'd be hard not to accept that, because Ram Leela would collapse. But, yeah, well, that's an important point. I'll get back to that. So these descriptions of the universe, there's the banyan tree under which Lord Shiva sits is a million yojanas high and a million yojanas across. And even if you try to define yojana at the shortest way possible, it still seems highly improbable, if not impossible. So what do we make of all of this? Well, some devotees point out that, after all, the Bhagavatam is not a book of astronomy. It's a book of spiritual science. And this description of the universe is given there on Parikshit's request, but the idea of describing the universe is to give some idea of the greatness of Krishna, and we can understand from this our own insignificance. It's not meant to be it's described for a certain purpose. It's not meant to be an astronomical treatise per se. So that's one thought about that. And Shukadev was describing that according to what he knew at the time, because obviously thoughtful people in every era, when they look up at night and they see the stars and they see the movements of the sun and the moon, and naturally they wonder about that and they try to explain it, and they explained it in the best possible way they could at the time. But nowadays we have science which is more sophisticated, and so we don't have to reject or think they were stupid, but they were just speaking to what they understood at the time. And now we have more sophisticated instruments and ways of finding out. You didn't throw me out yet. Remember, I'm just quoting what some devotees say. I'm not saying that, I'm saying this. So nowadays, so it's not, we can understand they were highly the rishis, they were highly advanced spiritualists and philosophers, but we should just understand that modern science has made great progress. For instance, we don't find in the Vedas any knowledge of DNA or genes or germs as the cause of disease. So we have to admit that modern science has made lots of progress, and that there are some things which were not known, and therefore we accept the spiritual teachings of Shastra, and we don't have to take literally such descriptions of the universe as are given in the Bhagavad Purana. There's a major problem with that. The problem is that Krishna says, well, one problem with that is that Krishna says here, Nakshatranam Aham Shashi, among the stars I am the moon, which means that Krishna also accepts the... By this we can understand that Krishna accepts the cosmological descriptions in the Puranas. And if we say that, well, we don't, that it's just allegorical or what people knew at that time, that means that Krishna doesn't know also. That means the Bhagavad Gita is also incorrect. And when Krishna says, Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam, hetanana kauntaya jagat viparivartate, I am supervising the whole universe with its moving and non-moving beings. When Krishna says, aham sarvasya prabhavaha, everything comes, everything is generated from me. When Krishna is described as sarvagya, knowing everything, vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani, when Krishna says, I know everything past, present and future, that means he got it wrong with the cosmology. When it's stated in Shastra that all the Vedas and Puranas, they come from the breathing of Narayana, then what happened? Then the idea that in previous ages people, they didn't really know, so they just filled in with some ideas that they had. They had some ideas, just like the earthquake. How do you explain an earthquake? Well, there are four elephants upholding the earth, and when one of them moves, there's an earthquake. But nowadays we know there are the movement of seismic plates and all this kind of thing. Yeah, well, it becomes a problem because Shastra describes this, and if you say with that, we only take the material description, we don't take the spiritual and not the material, but then we find that the description of the universe is that they emanate in seed form from the body of Mahavishnu. So, how do you differentiate between what's spiritual and what's material? In Krishna's pastimes, he also visits the Varuna Loka. He goes to the planet of Yamaraj. He takes the chariot through the coverings of the universe to visit Mahavishnu. It's all the description of the universe is inherent in Krishna's Leela. Then we have the four-headed Brahma coming to Krishna, the same one who is described as the creator of the universe, the engineer of the universe. So, how do we differ? Where do we go if we take this argument that that modern science they actually know, and previously the shastras, what's there? That's just some speculation. Then we have to reject Shastra as it is, then we can only take Shastra as to pick and choose what we think is correct, and then the whole authority of Shastra is lost. If we think that actually people are gradually becoming more advanced in material knowledge, this idea is all coming from Darwinian evolutionary theory. And it means that we think that these people who are working on the platform of Brahm Pramad Vipralipsa Karana Patav, who are illusioned, make mistakes, have the cheating propensity, and whose senses are imperfect, that they know better than the rishis, they know better than Vyasadeva, they know better than the Shastra, they know better than Krishna. Brahmad Vipralipsa Karana Partav Ishvare Vake Nahido Sheshab. The words of God, Krishna, they are devoid of these faults. But we're going to have to ascribe these faults to Krishna if we don't accept Shastra as it is. So it's a great challenge, actually, to our whole way of thinking. We tend to, the whole contemporary worldview is one which is described by science and accepted by all people who are considered to be normal and sane. Of course, there are people, there's quite a large number of people in America who think, according to their understanding of the Bible, that the earth was created about 6,000 years ago. And they don't care about this scientific data. Or they have scientists and they may say things, well, dinosaur bones were put there by God to test our faith in the biblical version. They have this description and that description. They have people with scientific training who also uphold this view, which just goes to show that you can't really be sure by science anyway, because if the consensus orthodox scientific view is that the world began the earth began how many years ago, because they always change it, they always, whatever it is, they're always putting it back further and further. It's 50 billion years ago. The earth became a discrete unit, separate from the sun. It was supposed to come from the sun, right? It got thrown out from the sun, but it couldn't go very far away because of the gravitational pull of the sun and all this. Well, according to what Srila Prabhupada states here, he speaks about there are 50 varieties of wind blowing in space, and according to what Srila Prabhupada has described is these winds which keep the planets in motion, that's a factor. They're also propelled by the deities of the planets. The sun is on a chariot. But according to at least what I learned at school, it might have changed since then, but there's no air in space anyway. But then when I was a kid, there was no water on the planets either, but now there is. So I really don't know. I have to be careful about what I say, what I learned at school, because it's all subject to revision at every moment. Whereas what is in the Shastra is not. That is a major point of why we should keep faith in Shastra. The very fact that eclipses can be predicted according to Vedic astronomy suggests that everything else they state about astronomy is correct also. Although it may seem just completely outlandish and absurd to us. But I was able to have faith in all these things because one reason is that I understood from a young age, even before I heard anything about the Krishna Conscious Movement, that at school they're deliberately teaching us things which are not true. Or the consensus idea of what is truth and reality, I understood that they're deliberately teaching us some wrong things. Just like, for instance, just considering that all over the world, in all cultures, there are descriptions of ghosts and dragons and all different kinds of beings, but you're not supposed to believe in that. But, so anyway, I understood that they're deliberately promoting what I now understand to be a materialistic worldview. And it's not just that I'm such a brilliant philosopher as a kid that I understood this, but there are many, many people who, which Richard Dawkins, just like belief in God, he calls that the God delusion. There's something wrong in the, long-standing defect in the genetic code of many people, that they have some genetic formation which makes them believe in God. Good try. Rascal. So, really, we can't, how do we harmonize the modern scientific worldview with the Vedic worldview? We don't. We don't. There's no harmonizing. There's no harmonizing. We should take everything. Our values, just like in the modern ages, the values of individual expression, human rights. There are no such ideas in the Shastra. Not that human rights, human rights, as we would describe it today, is totally absent, but rather all such notions are subsumed within the topic, the meta-topic of dharma. So human rights is not a consideration in and of itself, but it's at every step tempered by dharma, one's duty. And within that, there are statements as such statements as "ma hingsa sarva bhutani." Do not commit violence to any living being. So it's a completely different outlook. But we can't pick and choose. We can't say that, well, I like the chanting of Hare Krishna, but I don't like this bit, I don't like that bit. And we have to take it all as a package. And even if we think that, well, people won't appreciate this or that, but practically everything about Krishna consciousness they won't appreciate. The teachings are so much non-politically correct that it's a lot easier just to say that, and more straightforward just to say that, well, yeah, we think the scientists are wrong, that's all. Bhagavad Gita is right. Rather than trying to, well, actually Krishna said this, and that's just the way people thought at the time, and therefore Krishna said that. It's not the mythology of people who were ignorant. We find all the great acharyas, the great philosophers, Vyasadeva himself, and amid all this high philosophy, are they just going to put in some fairy stories which they didn't really know, so they just imagined that the world is according to the Puranic description. The Europeans coming to India, they were impressed at the Brahmins' philosophical disposition. But they thought, why are you worshipping idols? They thought this worship of idols was something just really stupid. Putting the deities to rest, fanning the deity, and all this kind of thing. I thought, this is just stupid. And mostly the Brahmins, they would explain, no, it's just a representation, even at that time. They didn't have a real understanding. Most, unless they're in a pure Vaishnava Sampradaya, they must think like that. A representation of the Supreme. And the common people think that the idol is actually actually some god or whatever. So this is a great challenge for our movement to establish this. And it will be difficult for people who are raised in the consciousness that, yes, well, by science we're understanding so many things, and it's clear that the moon goes around the earth goes around the sun, and the sun is a star. It's clear because they all think like that among themselves. But if you ask them to prove it, most of the people, they don't know. I often do this when people say, well, prove God. I say, well, do you believe in Big Bang Theory? Yes. Can you prove it? No, all the scientists do that. You mean you believe in the scientists? Why, you don't know. You just believe them. You can't prove it. So most people, they believe that the moon goes around the earth goes around the sun is one of the stars, but they wouldn't know how to prove it. They just believe, and everyone just, they just all believe what everyone else believes, and they just, everyone convinces each other. This Sharajantrai Bhagavan Hoilo Bhut, this story of the plot, the minister called Bhagavan, he was converted into a ghost. the minister, one minister called Bhagavan, he was envied by other ministers of the king, who told the king that actually he became sick for some days, and the ministers told him actually he died suddenly, and the king was very distraught. Now I'm getting mixed up here, different stories. Anyway, then when Bhagavan came out for his morning walk, then everyone who saw him, they all had a plot. They all became scared and ran away, and saying, "Ah, it's a ghost, it's a ghost, it's a ghost." And then when Bhagavan came into the court of the king, they all chased him, and they said, "Oh, he came." He said, "No, it's a ghost, it's a ghost." And then he himself started to think, "I'm a ghost," because everyone else said he's a ghost. Everyone he already died. So in this way, they got him banished from the court. By if you say something enough, everyone starts to believe it. So, sangat sanjayate kamaha, by association, our desires and our understanding develops. So, it's a great challenge for our movement to combat these ideas. And actually, our whole theology depends on this. That's what some devotees are saying. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether there's fifth canto descriptions of the cosmos. It doesn't matter whether that's correct. Or what really matters is that Krishna is God and Krishna Leela. That's what really matters. But it does matter. Because if the Shastric descriptions are not correct, then everything else collapses. Nakshatranam Maham Shashi, Krishna says it in the Bhagavad Gita. Then Bhagavad Gita becomes suspect. then everything Krishna says becomes suspect. Then Maya Dakshena Prakriti, that Krishna is supervising the whole material energy. He doesn't know what's going on. He's also subject to this mythology because he doesn't know what's going on. The whole thing collapses. So it's a great challenge for our movement to uphold the Vedic version. Srila Prabhupada was very much wanted to do this. We see right here in the purport, he never made any concession to modern ideas about the universe. He talks about the 50 varieties of wind blowing in space. He doesn't say that, well, according to what people in India thought 5,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago, whenever you think Krishna might have appeared, if such a person as Krishna ever existed, then people thought like that. But anyway, you have to take, the idea is that Krishna is supreme, so he's just like, you just get in a whole, logical tangle. So it's just straightforward. We accept Shastra, and we have to establish that. And so Srila Prabhupada is very enthusiastic to do that. He wanted a Vedic planetarium, which is supposed to show cosmology, according to the Puranas, as a challenge to the modern scientific idea of the universe. So, people speak as if they know, but Srila Prabhupada was convinced that they don't know. And why was he convinced? Because on the basis of Shastra, our whole access to Krishna and understanding of Krishna is via Shastra. If we don't accept this, then we can just throw out everything. Or we can try and rationalize it, re-explain it, but these explanations don't work. They collapse on themselves. We're going to have a planetarium here. Vedic planetarium. You have like that, yeah. You have all that, yeah, okay. In Udupi, in the main temple there, there's one deeper with Meru and all kinds of. And I think most people don't notice that. I don't know. Yeah, it would be part of everyday life that people would accept. People would accept that. Now they have scientific explanations, what they call scientific. This is what are called the new atheists say, that now with the progress of science, there's no need for a God to explain everything. We can understand that people said God when they didn't have any knowledge, but now that we have scientific knowledge of how everything is, that there's no need of God. There's no need of God to explain everything. We can explain everything by science. And then if you say some things they can't explain, they say, well, we're working on it. We're working on it. So it is a great challenge. Any questions? Great challenge, yeah. Means we have to arise to it. Challenge means we have to be prepared and fight. The sun is the only self-luminous Jyoti Sham Ravi Rang Shuman among the. Well, sun is the only self-luminous body in the universe. But here, Krishna says, Jyoti Sham Ravirang Shuman. So among luminous beings. But then Srila Prabhupada explains that others are luminous because they take luminosity from the sun. Angshuman, Srila Prabhupada translates that as radiant. And it literally means having rays. So others have rays also, but they are rays which bounce off they're taken from the sun and they bounce back. They bounce off. This is what we can understand. Yeah, there is some. Srila Prabhupada says there is also some luminosity. The moon has some self-luminosity also. But it also reflects the sun. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.